You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode 21. This episode, Relevant Relations.
Again.
Are you here, Coathan? Coltan?
Coltan.
What did I fuse to say?
Nice, literally here. Colton. Colton's also with us. He's feeling ill under the weather, but please don't judge him for these things. Eric, apparently in a social gathering right now with like other peoples of a Justice League or some entourage that he wants to join.
Yup.
And P. Bing is currently up to date with everything that's going on in the Green Lantern history.
Damn right.
And Brandon, who's, I don't know, are you still drunk?
Getting there.
Cool.
Word.
So today's episode is going to deal with a few things in following order. One, the Guardians have just been shown what their concepts are for the movie, and they're looking fantastic. We're also going to be talking about the Tony Bedard interview that he had. It was a written interview that he gave recent, if you guys have seen it. If not, you can also catch it at the Green Lantern forums. We're also going to be talking about the fact that Blake Lively may or may not be coming out smiling out of the rose in the Green Lantern movie. But more on that later on.
Smelling.
Inherently shitty Green Lantern movie.
More on that later on. We're also going to be talking about the two issues of Green Lantern related that came out the following week. Brightest Day number 18 and Green Lantern Corps number 56, where Kyle Rayner is totally the guy we all remember him as. So bringing up the Guardians redesigned for the movie. What do we think about here? Bulbous heads, nice attires, little Green Lantern symbols.
Was it they all smelled a bad fart or they all needed to fart?
No. They come out smelling like roses. Roses.
Except for the one with the deformed head.
If you want to see these images, you can go to the Green Lantern forums.
He smells like peach fuzz.
You can see the pictures clearly. There are about three Guardians are shown.
About three. Approximately three.
There's Gambit, the girl, and the brain-damaged one.
We can all assume has to be the Mad Guardian, Krona.
Why does everyone look at me like I'm the evil one? Because they got a freaking swollen head.
I want to say I like the designs. I'm not really. I think it's cool that they brought the green into them. I think it's one of those things where it's like you're like, oh, why don't they wear green? Why are they wearing yellow? I mean, it's true. Why are they wearing yellow? Why don't they wear green? I mean, so that's. I mean, I kind of would prefer it just to be. I like the idea that the Guardians don't wear the same colors as them, but it's just they're a cool design. I like that. I didn't like that they're ladies from the get go. I kind of always thought it was silly the Guardians are all. I mean, it makes sense if you think about the fact that the Guardians are like patriarchic assholes that they'd be like, you know, just dudes. But in all fairness, you know.
I thought all their ladies left.
Or yeah, I guess there's Zamaron, so I guess we're not going to get any kind of Zamaron action going on. I mean, obviously it's just concept art, but I think it does show that I don't think they've finalized the design yet.
I like the look, and I like the look of like the lantern emblem on their chest. Although I just got this kind of image in my mind that how long is it going to be until someone photoshops like a Flava Flav?
And I'm doing that right now.
Flav.
I want to say I'm really happy with a lot of the alien designs in the movie, and I think that's, I wish, from what I understand, they're not going to be in the movie very much, so that's unfortunate, and I think that'd be pretty cool if they were, so.
Well, something's got to make up for the fact that Hal Jordan's not in his own comic.
I'm sorry, Gary.
Yeah, that. Boy!
Did I cut out?
No, you just weren't funny.
I'm going to kill myself for that.
No, Brandon, what do you think of the design?
It's fine.
He's very chill tonight.
It's fine. I like the idea that they wear a shirt more than I like the idea of seeing them on the big screen. I'd buy the shirt. Nobody would ever get it, even if the movie was a mass success. No one would you know.
Why would you buy that shirt? Why would you buy this shirt?
I know I wouldn't be able to buy that shirt. I mean, considering where the face is on.
Yeah, it would be two faces right there. Yeah, yeah, no. But why would you wear a shirt with...
Where's the face?
Oh, come on. Really, Colton?
Wow.
Really? I honestly haven't seen the shirt.
They're like
we posted the picture. Seriously, Colton, you're an idiot.
I didn't look.
That's your fault.
All right, moving on from the discussion of these fantastic-looking Guardian pieces. We're going to be talking about the Tony Bedard interview. Eric, I know you had a few thoughts about it.
Oh, yeah, Tony Bedard did an interview with Comic Book Resources. He said he was going to do an interview with us after he was done with his plot line. I don't know if that's going
to
happen or not.
No, he's going to be awkward, so it's going to be soon, hopefully.
Okay, yeah, hopefully he will, because I think I would like to ask him a couple questions they don't really ask him. They do talk about some interesting things in the interview, though. They do talk about what I was afraid of, you know, the whole Jon Stewart versus Kyle Rayner fight. I mean, Tony Bedard more or less says what everybody I think, believes. I think you can go to the Green Lantern Corps forums, and you can see that, you know, the poll going is that pretty much people believe Jon Stewart's going to win. And I think, you know, there's been hints and intimations that they're going to do something to build up his character the last couple of months. So it makes perfect sense that eventually he'd, you know, do something big, like beat up the guy who's gotten beat up, nothing but beat up since Tony Bedard took over the title. But
something of note, this isn't actually confirmed he'll get beat up. It's just speculation.
I do want to reiterate that they actually have already had a fight, and Kyle Rayner won it soundly. I do want to say that. I mean, I don't know if that makes it. I know I'm one of those fans that's like, oh, he should win. I don't care. I'm one of those fans that's like, oh, he should win. But besides that.
Reference, okay. This actually happened during the second time Kyle, or the third time Kyle's met Major Force.
Well, this is round two, bitch. It's over.
Round two.
Yeah, this is way back fight. Before. This is way back before. This is right before Rebirth and stuff. So it was Kyle's last storyline was really all this shit. Yeah, I think he talks about that. He also talks about some other stuff that's kind of innocuous, nothing really interesting happening in the storylines. But then he makes a point to talk about something that's really interesting about Sinestro. He makes the point, oh, Geoff Johns done something really interesting with Sinestro. He's made him a lot like Doctor Doom, which is kind of like pointing out that Sinestro is not really an interesting character. Just kind of making him more like a character that was interesting at one time.
He's done something really interesting. He's turned him into another character.
Yeah, he's turned him into a much more interesting
character. That's a real interesting decision.
Which is funny, because the big shit talking about Kyle has always been that he's really a Marvel character, not a DC character. You know, he's more like Spider-Man than he is like anybody else. Which, you know, again, I don't mean to be like redundant, but don't we really think that Kyle would be a perfect entry point as a character for the films? I mean, right? Like, he's more like... I mean, who can relate to an Air Force pilot who works as a test pilot for a multi-billion-dollar company, you know, that makes weapons that kill people? I mean,
pilot at a multi-billion-dollar corporation that tests weapons?
I mean, does that job even exist? One.
Well, does relating to a movie character become relevant to an audience?
Actually, it does.
You're supposed to relate to your protagonist.
Seriously, who relates to Superman?
Wait, no. First off, that's the problem with Superman Returns, right? Wasn't everybody's problem with Superman Returns?
It was crappily written.
No, that's
right. And the reason it was crappily written is because it was an unrelatable character.
Right. I happen to think that the movie, the point of that movie, that it's unrelatable, and that's why the movie really worked. And that's why Alien. Yeah.
To answer Brandon's question, yes. In many respects, now in this new medium of like a movie age. The audience has to relate to the character in order to identify with him. If you can't identify with the character, most people cannot normally like look at the character and say, you know what, I believe in what he's fighting for, I believe in what he's doing.
There's a big difference between believing what he believes in morally and his fucking job description.
No, but
you're right.
You can't hate Al Jordan because he's a fucking pilot.
No, you don't hate him, you just don't feel like this is a character that you can relate to. It's not...
That's bullshit. That's like saying, oh, I can't relate to the Dark Knight because Bruce Wayne is fucking rich and I'm not fucking rich. Like, or Iron Man sucks because Tony Stark sells weapons and, you know, I work at fucking McDonald's.
No, but that's no, listen, but why was Iron Man the way it
Tony
was?
Tony Stark why? Sells weapons and I work at McDonald's.
No, exactly, but why was Iron Man successful the way it was versus other superhero movies, like, you know, that weren't that successful? I mean, you know, Daredevil, I guess, was actually successful. I'm trying to think of one that isn't successful. Like
Elektra?
Maybe Elektra, yeah. Because
Elektra had a chick in the lead, so that's what
Elektra was. Yeah, right. Iron Man was basically successful because it was the Judd Apatow version of a superhero movie. I mean, it was basically like...
Andrew.
But it's a superhero movie, you know?
It had absolutely nothing to do with his fucking job description. My point is that you can't say Hal's not relatable just because he's a fucking pilot. That's all I'm saying.
It's not relatable at all. I'm saying, I mean, you can write anybody as being relatable. I'm saying that he's not as, it wouldn't, it's not a good entry point for an audience to pick a job like that, because it's kind of like saying, you remember the guy from Top Gun? What if he had superpowers? It's like, he's already the guy from Top Gun. It's not as interesting if it's like, you know, that's why Superman is a classic origin. That's why Batman's a classic
origin.
Actually,
we've gotten the right stuff.
Pulling that string. You're just trying to be angry.
I mean, think about it. I mean, come on.
There's nothing to think about. It's like, you're trying to pick a fight and there's nothing there.
You're not grasping it. The first thing in your mouth was like, why is it important for people to relate to movie characters? Which is insane. That's the entire point of going to the movie.
Why is it important for me to relate to Hal Jordan?
This is how good movies are written. I mean, clearly you don't know how to write how movies are written, how movies are made.
Let's table this for one second.
Nothing. What do you have in common with Superman? Nothing. What the fuck is the issue here?
Wait, you are angry. Wait up a second.
I agree with Brandon,
guys. Table it for a second, all right?
Yeah.
We'll move on.
I do want to say it. I'm sorry. Yeah. We'll move on from that. Okay.
We'll move on from this entire conversation.
Hatred.
Listen, I do want to say something really, really quick, just to settle everything. I don't know if you want me to stop, I will.
Go ahead.
Okay. The reason Superman is relatable is because he grew up poor. The reason Batman's relatable is because he lost his family. I mean, if you have just... The reason Iron Man worked is because we're at a post-white people age where it's like...
All assholes?
I mean, because basically Iron Man is like a rap celebrity. Iron Man is like Seth Rogen. Every movie with Adam Sandler plays a rich guy who has sex with supermodels. It's ridiculous, but there's an escapist fantasy element to it. So that's what they're going for with the Hal Jordan character. I happen to think that if you're going to make a superhero movie about something as fantastic as a ring that can do anything, getting a character that pretty much already has everything and giving him more... kind of just makes me angry, you know. I mean, the reason Iron Man works is because Robert Downey Jr. is so funny in it, and that's why it works. I mean, but Hal Jordan,
Ryan Reynolds isn't funny.
No, he's funny, but I mean, it's also not an improv movie. You know, it's not written the same way. It's a Martin Campbell. It's like a Mask of Zorro type thing. I'm just saying, like, I happen to think that if you look at successful superhero movies, you're going to find the track record is the ones that are more relatable are the more successful ones. I mean, the most successful superhero franchise ever is, I guess, besides X-Men, Spider-Man, right? And what's Spider-Man about? The nerdiest guy who has nothing. And who, even when he gets superpowers, has nothing. You know, I mean, those movies, like, are ridiculously popular across the board. And X-Men,
I think you need to look at the bare minimum. It's not about the movies. You're looking at comic books. They're all going to have the same basic core values. So... comparing Hal Jordan as a guy who has everything and getting more and writing him off because of that is just silly. It'd be like not picking up a Green Lantern comic because Hal Jordan has everything and he gets more.
It's one of the reasons why people have trouble with him as a character, but I'm not saying, and that's one of the reasons why he was so...
Is it? People have trouble with him because he's a fighter pilot?
As someone who has trouble with him, and as someone who actually detests movies that I can't relate to at least one of the characters in, I feel like I have something to share with this. Hal doesn't seem to me to be... There are comic book movies, and then there are movies with comic book characters in them. And my fear when it comes to the Green Lantern movie is that it's going to be a movie, a superhero movie, and not a movie with superheroes in it. I want to see it. I want my comic book characters to be people who make decisions, and those decisions are completely beyond my scope of understanding. You know, I don't want the cocky guy to get everything the cocky guy wants and have no conflict. I need a sense of conflict. I need something to resonate with.
Yeah. Them. Well, that's what kind of art can you do?
Normally, I don't like Superman.
It's okay. You can relate to someone in the movie. Blake Lively is a woman.
Oh, right. We could totally share it.
Damn, cool. Yeah.
I think we need to move on.
I agree.
Okay, Andrew is clearly on the cast now. He wants to dive his 2 cents into what's we're going on. Andrew, I actually want to ask you what you think about the Guardian designs that, you know, that have been recently shown.
They make me think of like the Guild from Dune or something, but it's actually kind of cool. I mean, it's not too dissimilar from the original designs that we saw of this.
Would you buy that shirt?
The Guardian shirt?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'd probably rock that. Why not? That's kind of cool.
It almost looks like Brandon will rock this shirt.
It almost looks like the Alpha.
He doesn't mean the guard. Cool. He means the shirt with the three guards.
Yeah. I just saw that too. Yeah, no, that's cool. That's actually kind of cool.
Could you could you have a contest where you get that shirt, please?
If only if they sell it at Hot Topic.
Yeah, they sell it at Hot Topic.
now we're gonna move into the discussion.
This confirms that they're post Kyle social experiment. Guardians?
They're already ladies. Yeah,
Kyle's.
I'm talking about that. There's no Zamorons, but how's that going to work?
Although, admittedly, is that a female guardian or is it just a Metro guardian?
No, I think the guardian glass ceiling has been broken, and that is.
Do we want to talk about which cast members these guardians look like?
No. Okay, so we'll move on into our discussion.
He's like, give me the one.
An agent, I'm not specifically saying the agent of Blake Lively, but has come out and they claim some things about the movie. And Eric, I know you have first word on this.
Oh, well, there's just, I think Wes might know more about the actual words said, but there was some scuttlebutt that there was some kind of interview with some kind of person who might have been tangentially related to Blake Lively, like publicity crew or something, who had made some kind of offhand comment that Blake Lively was going to blow up. And even though this Green Lantern movie was shit, everyone knows it's going to be shit, and it's going to be like a shitty, shitty movie, and they're reshooting the shit out of it, and shit, 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 and it's a bag of shit, and the word shit six more times, that Blake Lively's going to come out of it smelling like a rose. And that she's great, and everybody knows she's great, and it's not her fault that the movie's garbage, and they know that. And I don't know if that's a reaction to, you know, people kind of saying she was like a block of wood in the trailer, or if that's just some kind of like legitimate, like that guy didn't realize it was going to get out that he said it was shit. Though I kind of get the sense from reading around that there has been a kind of like, this movie's actually going to suck in the kind of undercurrent of the tabloids. So
the quote that sparked the most controversy was, should the forthcoming Green Lantern flop and it's been a troubled production, it won't hurt Lively much. Says the manager, whatever the mistakes were with the Green Lantern, she needs to not react to them and do an indie movie just because the big superhero movie didn't work. It's always about the role and the director. The hotter the person, the easier it is, and she's very hot right now. The agent adds, even though Green Lantern is supposed to be terrible, it doesn't mean it's not going to do extremely well and enhance our foreign values. Clash of the Titans was horrendous, but it didn't slow Sam Worthington any.
And except where Sam Worthington, but yeah.
Exactly.
Sam Worthington is doing big
things.
He's
doing fine.
Yeah, no, he's not. It didn't take him down a peg, but that got everybody pissed because like, oh, her agent is clearly an idiot. I mean,
if anything, he needs to kind of take a break from movies for a little while. I mean, I feel like
he was
oversaturated. He was oversaturated for a good minute.
This is not the same word in this podcast.
He's just doing big budgets. That's all. He needs to tone it down.
Sam Worthing or Blake Lively?
Blake needs to tone it up. Get it going again.
You forgot? Yeah, Wes lives through Blake Lively. That's Wes. Damn.
Okay, I posted this on Twitter, on the Green Lantern Corps Twitter, and there was a lot of backlash. One guy went on, and I wish I had it up right now, but the guy went on and talked about how terrible Blake Lively is and how she'll never have a career and she should be lucky she even made this film.
Clearly Wes got extremely angry at that because, you know.
I was very respectable to the fan, and I told him that that the facts are that this article from New York Magazine gave two sources, an agent and a manager. Neither one of them specified that it was Blake's agent or manager. Now, assumption said, oh, this is just her people covering for him, or like Eric said, when that would be ridiculous. Even the dumbest agent in Hollywood would know better than to try to cover their tracks when a fucking trailer is released for a blockbuster movie. You don't go bad-mouthing a blockbuster movie based off a trailer that came out in fucking November. Like, you have a, what was the budget? $150 million film, and you're going to bad-mouth it to save your client's career? Your client has the number one TV show on her network. She's not suffering, you know? She's not suffering at all. She's got movies out the ass coming up. She's got recognition from a Ben Affleck movie.
And she was in a Lonely Island
video.
She's
one of the hottest directors out right now. She's
Lonely Island
like,
video.
I could jump back into this article and praise her just like I praise, like they did. But I mean, I don't see any reason for any fan to get upset or anybody on this cast to be like, oh, fuck Blake Lively, because obviously she's trying to cover her tracks and save her own ass in case the movie flops. Even if the movie flops, even if she gives in a poor performance, are you going to, like, seriously say that this article had, you know, was her people covering her feet? No, it's just impossible to damn her because of what two sources said. And for all we know, New York Magazine could clearly be shit.
Clearly these two people are just stupid. They don't know what they're talking about. They're just making assumptions based on
There was no troubled production. Like, we've been covering this since day fucking one. There's never been any troubled production. Now, like Eric said, there was a little backlash for Blake being a little stiff in the trailer, but there was never any doubt that the production was.
It's not like we were ever getting day by day set reports, though. You don't know what's going on there. Not to insinuate that there was trouble, but I mean,
we get that with X-Men. We get that with X-Men. We get that with Captain America. We get that with Thor. We got that Anthony Hopkins did Christian Bale. Yes.
No, there's definitely been a lot of scuttlebutt that a lot of these super movies have had trouble productions. But I think it's because they all have had this scuttlebutt. But I think they all have just had this scuttlebutt because they all are having trouble productions. I mean, the X-Men movie especially got that movie didn't even start getting produced until halfway through the production time of all the other movies.
They got 13 weeks to go. Like
they added an additional 6 weeks to filming after. Now the director has already finished his shoot, and he's instead of just doing pickups like they're saying they're doing, they're filming an additional 6 weeks. And Green Lantern, I'm not sure what the actual number is, but I believe, unless I'm mistaken, they also are filming an additional extended weeks, which is fine. I mean, for all I know, maybe the movie sucked and it's going to be better. I happen to think that what was the movie that had extensive reshoot? I mean, Wolfman. Everybody hated Wolfman, but I kind of liked Wolfman, and apparently all the stuff I liked about it was all done in the reshoots and stuff. So
Wolfman had two directors. So.
Well, Wolfman, no. The first director never started directing. He just did a lot of the production design and stuff. But no, I mean, you're not wrong in saying that it's not really Blake Lively's fault. But I don't think it matters if it's Blake Lively's fault. I think in the information age, this is happening more and more and more. That back in the day, we never would have known. They had a documentary about flop big movies. And they talked to the guys who created Godzilla. And the guys who directed Godzilla and wrote it, they said that 2 months before it was released, they realized that they had a fucking shitty movie. And they know exactly what they did wrong. And they said if they just had the chance to go back and shoot another 2-3 weeks of stuff, which is ridiculous. They could have fixed it. And he said, we knew it was wrong, but we couldn't do anything about it. It was too late. So we had to lie our asses off in the press, say we thought it was the best movie ever made. We think it's amazing. We can't wait to get this out. We're going to make 60 sequels. We knew that when they knew it was going to bomb. But it was too late. But now with the information age, with so many people being involved in so many different ways of production, and it's so easy to get information from any production that we're going to have more stuff like this. People coming out and saying, this movie is supposed to be shit. Don't worry about it. This movie is supposed to be shit. Don't worry about it. You know, and it's X-Men First Class. I mean, what about the fucking clusterfuck for X-Men First Class? You know what I mean? Like, Green Lantern really hasn't anything that dramatic happen, you know, but I mean, what an insane, insane clusterfuck in the press this week. And they released a bunch of pictures to save ass, which just made people hate the production even more. You know, the difference being something like Spider-Man. Now, Spider-Man is, I think what they realize, that's the problem. I think Spider-Man is doing the smart marketing. Like, you know, let's market we're not coming out until another year and a half. Let's market ourselves like we're coming out when they're coming out. That way it seems like we get our shit together and stuff, which is whatever. That movie, I think, has the most to prove any other movies. But still, you know what I mean? That's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, the information age, you're going to get more and more people saying movies are shittier and shittier. And I honestly happen to think that the scuttlebutt for a little while has been this movie is going to be kind of weak. They're working around some problems with it. And hopefully they are doing some reshoots, because I think they're obviously showing a lot of monster stuff. You know, they're showing a lot of the alien stuff up front and avoiding the fact that 90% of the movie apparently takes place on Earth with nothing really exciting happening. You know, and that's not really what they should be advertising to the main audience, but that's what I want to see, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, then again, the general audience isn't going on these film blogs. It's the geeks and the people who want to know behind the scenes shit. You know, I think, see posts every day that say, oh, Ryan Reynolds is the Green Lantern? Cool. You know? People still don't even know about this movie. So for them to give a source like an agent and a manager to talk about a troubled production, fuck out of here. Tell me what the DP says or the fucking camera guy who's there every day. You know? Tell me what the boom mic man is feeling about.
What does the craft services guy think?
That's what we're dealing with. Dealing with somebody who's so far removed from the production that they felt comfortable, and obviously so amateurish, that they felt comfortable enough talking an insane amount of shit about the production in an open, honest way. Now, it's very possible he was just covering her ass and, you know, because it's not tracking at all. We discussed this, that they did the tracking of, like, the top 10 movies people are excited about for the summer. Green Lantern's not even in the top 10 that people are talking about, so... As Wes said, there is a pretty huge gap in terms of the marketing that people don't even know what's happening. But I mean, you know, that's a weakness.
I feel like the big problem in that though is that they released the trailer a little bit earlier than they should have.
No,
I don't think that's true. No. I think they should have just had more trailer. I think they did the best they could. I mean, I don't know.
You can't get any bigger than Harry Potter.
I agree that it's a good idea to put it with Harry Potter, but maybe. You know, it is a shame they don't have anything else coming out soon. But like if Harry Potter had come out a month later, it would have been perfect. But since it had to come out since Harry Potter was coming out in November, they had to throw it with Harry Potter in November. But the trailer would have benefited from coming out a month later. But you know, you're not going to come out with a bigger movie, but it would have benefited from coming out a month later.
Maybe, but I happen to think that the Harry Potter movie. As Wes is saying, that they really didn't have any opportunities to do anything else because, I mean, think about it. What else are they going to put on? Because they know that they're kind of the also-rans, you know. I don't think anybody – I mean, does anybody really think Thor is going to blow the roof off of people, you know? I don't think anybody think that's going to happen, you know. No. But and I think it might end up being popular, but I don't think – and I think it's going to be popular in spite of itself. And same thing with Captain America, you know, but I happen to think that the Green Lantern people know that, like, you know what, we are kind of actually, we are also the also-rans here, you know, and I think Andrew said it best a couple weeks back, and it didn't hit me till he said it, but, like, you know, we're all kind of just assuming that it's going to do well, you know, because we're fans of Green Lantern, and it's like, why would we assume that? Like, we're thinking about, like, yeah, actually, more movies bomb these days than are successes, you know, I mean, even something like Tron, which is going to get, you know, which made a bajillion billion dollars, and it's going to get a sequel and cartoons and stuff. It is, because they have a teaser trailer.
Yeah, it's pretty much happening.
Yeah, they're pre-announced for another Tron movie.
Well, they announced that they're releasing a trailer for Tron 3 on the Blu-ray, so they're producing it, whether we like it or not, but I like it, but whatever, you know. And
it's crossed
and,
300 million worldwide, I believe.
Yeah, they're saying it would have had to make $1 billion. Yeah. And what Disney realizes is now what we're looking at is we're looking at long-term failed marketing, right? We're looking at movies that aren't successes that are getting sequels, like Clash of the Titans, and, you know, getting a sequel. And
that was huge, though.
Is that movie really getting a sequel?
It is, but the point in fact is it wasn't as successful as it should have been because it cost twice as much as it made. It just cost way much more money than it ever would have made back, and that's what we're getting. And Disney's going, Tron made a lot of money, but there's no way we can make money back on the first movie. You know what? We'll just make a bunch of TV series, we'll make it a big franchise, and we'll make a second movie, and we'll make its money back, you know? Like Princess and the Frog, is that what the last one was? Was a huge bomb. Like, one of the least successful Disney movies ever made, and yet, it's one of the most franchised movies, you know? And it's like Cars. Cars is not the highest.
We gotta move on.
No, I want him to finish saying what he was gonna say. Then
Cars.
You have too many examples, Eric.
No.
Cars is also an example of a movie that wasn't the most successful Pixar movie, but has it is the highest grosser in terms ever of any Disney product ever. Cars has sold more merchandise than any other Disney product ever. And the movies are not the most successful movies, you know. And Disney's like, well, fuck yeah, we'll make a sequel to that shitty, shitty, shitty movie, you know, because we made a bajillion dollars.
It was not that bad.
So I refuse to see it. Come on, anything Larry the Cable Guy is in, I won't say.
So to move on from discussion, sorry. Very much, the movies, you know, the movies going to be coming out in the next, what, couple of, like, down the line in the coming months.
Very precise.
Pretty much as it's been said by Brandon, that pretty much that that not many people know what's going on with the film. A lot of people still don't know that, you know, Ryan Reynolds is in fact the Green Lantern. You count this as pretty much it being press is press, bad press equals good press in anyone's market in their eyes. If they start saying something about Blake Lively's whole agent, unquote agent, you know, maybe or not her agent, saying something about the movie being terrible, but Blake Lively's going to be great in it, or she's going to be fine. It's going to appeal to most mass.
She's going
to
be fine.
Like, most mass amounts of her fans going like, you know what? I didn't even know she was going to be in this movie. I got to go watch it now to see how much of a train wreck it is, just to see how great she is in it. You know, again, it's down the line. We'll see when it comes out. We'll see how much of this movie is going to be either fantastic, glorious, or if there were a giant amount of reshoots, or it was redone, or whatever. But again, we won't know any of this until it comes out, you know, in the coming months. So pretty much we're going to move on to the two issues that came out. Again, the Brightest Day number 18 and Green Lantern Corps number 56. Now, Brightest Day number 18 had pretty much is the conclusion of the Hawk story. And I know a lot of you listeners have heard us complain a lot about the Hawks, you know, giving us saying about how much their story arc made no sense or didn't go anywhere. And pretty much, again, this issue concludes their storyline. So
I don't know.
That's the debate, right?
And, so, yeah, Andrew has made the point. We technically are not totally satisfied in the conclusion of their storyline. Mainly also because, again, we're inside information. We already know that there is an issue. They are getting their own ongoing issues soon enough. But pretty much, how do we think, as a story, as a storyline, as a story arc, and the storyline of itself, in Brightest Day number 18, what do we think, as in general, what the story, how it ended up, how it went from the beginning of their story, trying to break the chains of fate, to succumbing to it at the end of this arc?
They turned from lovers really fighting for themselves to finally be together forever, and then they turned into cocaine dust. I don't know what happened.
I think I'm picturing all the Hawk stuff together and putting it together, and I realize it went by really, really quickly. Like, I know it was really painful to read at first, but now it's just like if you look at them, all their appearances, it was just like they went from their bedroom to the fighting in the sky, to the fighting in the jungle, to the fighting in the sky, to Zamorin. You know, and it's over, and that's it, you know?
That is short, now that you mention it.
The only thing we got out of this is Hawk Girl's mom is crazy, and she lusts for power. That's what we got out of this, and...
And now she's in a gate.
That's, like, I wish she was still around, because she is actually the most interesting thing I've ever seen about the Hawks.
Okay, so to bring up to that, how do you feel her character actually being taken out in the way that she was? Pretty much not in a Hawk related method. Mostly it had to use the crutch of the Zamoronian power to get her out of the story.
I love the last issue, by the way, but I hated how she bonded with the Predator. I felt that was unnecessary. That's not how you build up somebody to be their own villain. By bonding them with another. It was a horrible idea to, like Andrew said, to bond the mythos of Hawkman and Green Lantern. But I hated that idea. Yeah. And I hate the fact that they just threw her to the side and then they said, oh, we're going to kill the Hawks too. So there's that. And it's not much of a shock, only because no one ever, like no one picking up this issue thinks, oh, they're seriously dead. Dead is actually dead.
Hawks actually have a tendency of coming back to life repeatedly.
And that's supposed to be the thing, that the curse is gone and that they can't come back anymore. But no one believes that. And specifically this core cast, because of the information we know. So it's like, there's absolutely no reason for me to enjoy this issue because, you know, I know that they'll be back and the shock value is all gone. Everything was just breezed by. You killed off the most interesting character. You killed off the stars and there was no shock value. So what am I left with? I'm left with Carol Ferris on her dinosaur that she obviously can't control, that I thought she knew how to control. So
it'll
now
be in Cronus hands in about a month, I'm sure.
So to bring a point, it's pretty funny the way that, you know, the Hawks were actually taken out in the book, you know, the White Lantern in such a dramatic offhanded way, like, you know, the dead man showing up, White Lantern and all, atomizing them, or, you know, as Colton straightly put it, cocaine dust. But the funny thing is, the way that they're taken out makes you not believe that they're dead. Actually takes you out of the story in a way. Just to see them getting murdered here, or done to whatever has happened to them. It would have been a lot easier if they were actually just shot. Like down the street, like walking down the street, go like, our curse is over, and then they're
shot. Day.
Yeah, what we see in this series, lately is a series of gotchas. Like, you think the universe is blown up? Ah, gotcha.
John is with his family? Gotcha.
Enough is enough.
I can't even count that as a gotcha. The one with John's with the family. I mean, they clearly showed you even beforehand. he's entangled with the other Martian. He's clearly in his own head.
Yeah, they didn't even bother to twist that around on us.
Now, this isn't Saif, is it? This is Joe Prado, right?
You should definitely know before we start talking.
Thing? Yeah, yeah. It's very professional.
I didn't buy the issue, yeah. So whatever, ever.
Like, oh my God.
I don't know, Artie and Saif drew most of it.
And you still haven't bought it. It's really crazy. I'm proud that you actually stuck to not buying it.
Yeah, what do you mean? What are you talking about? I'm not going to pick up a book that every other week everybody keeps saying is crap. Like,
no, it's good. They're just judgmental.
Why would you pick up the spine?
Now, who else has an opinion about the issue?
I want to hear what Colton has to say. Cause he never, no, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Jane, what do you have to say?
I only kind of got into it at the end, and now that it's kind of over, I'm going to go looking for the issues, because I tried to start reading this entire series, but my comic shop was out of, like, the ones in the middle, which is one of the reasons why I stopped reading. But I did manage to get these last couple issues. I was a little sad to see the sexing didn't happen. I'm tossing that out there, and I also have to admit two very, very dorky things that I'm sure will come back to bite me in the ass later. One, I thought their dusting at the end was a little too reminiscent of that old Adam West Batman movie where they turn everybody into pixie sticks.
Oh, yeah, they dehydrated them.
Robin slowly making the exit to the window.
And the other thing, I have so little experience with the Hawks whatsoever that I really didn't realize they were wearing helmets.
You just thought that was how they naturally looked, right? You know, just hawk people, hawk heads.
Because when they kissed, it was like, how does that work when you have beaks on your, you know, how is this going to happen? I was really excited for the sex
scene. Yeah, the sex scenes caught me by surprise because, well, the almost sex scenes caught me by surprise because, you know, they got to that page where they throw each other on the ground, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that'd be a nice break. Now, where's my Aquaman? And I turn the page, and she's throwing them against the wall, and I'm like, oh, well, here's some sex. And
I was doing this.
I was all hyped up for Aquaman, and then I get, you know.
Well, you do get a nice little teaser
at
the end of the page.
You know, I just noticed something when reading the Brightest Day issue with the part with Carol with the ring. She makes a little howl construct and is like looking at it affectionately. I didn't notice that the first time reading through it.
Oh, what'd you think was happening in that panel?
That was the lamest thing in the issue right there.
I'm sorry.
No one mentioned that, and I thought, you know what, I should mention
this. This is not Carol. This is retarded.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, the fact that the characters have been stating so many times, like, you know, what me and Hal have is nothing, it's not true love or whatever, is all this stuff.
She
like,
takes this time to be depressed out of nowhere, and it's like everything I just praised about Carol for the last three or four episodes just gets thrown out the window with this one panel, and it's like, thanks for just bringing up Hal. Like, fuck Hal Jordan. This is Carol Ferris.
I think she wants to.
Carol Ferris.
Yeah.
Well, with the way the art looks, it might be Kyle.
You know, I kind of thought it was for a split second.
That would be hilarious.
Eric, you want
John Stewart?
Let's go black.
Andrew, you had to get that last lick in there, didn't you?
I want to say something about the theme covers and stuff and how problematic they are considering a lot of the characters have really crummy logos and they didn't think that through considering 95% of the DC characters have like shit logos, but whatever.
I just realized the Hawk logo looks like a parakeet.
It looks like Red Robin's logo.
It's all branding.
What is the Hawks have the same logo, technically the same logo as the Blackhawks. They have the same logo as
Red
Robin's currently.
Is it Ultron?
Huh? Ultron. He has the Thundercat symbol.
I want to say, you know, I think if I was a Hawkman fan, I would really like this issue.
Hawk fan?
Because, you know, yeah, I don't know if they exist, but because I think it does resolve a pretty major storyline for them. I think it does kind of like it, but if I was a Hawkman fan, I'd hate this series anyway because the actual guy who was torturing them for like millennia got killed offhandedly by Hawkgirl almost by accident in the last issue. And the
whoopsie.
Just snapped his neck with her feet. Yay. So I think them using the cosmic sword of their love to run her through, et cetera, et cetera. I think I would be pretty stoked about it. And all the old spirits coming to life and finishing her off. That's cool. I think that really worked. I happen to think that what everybody else said about the issue is true, though. The end, I don't understand what happened to them. So it's not like I'm not shocked being like, they died even though they found each other for again. I'm like, that's the whole thing. Like, it's not really that dramatic. And this series is relying on too many instances of, like, value, like just pals, instead of, like, building up any kind of dramatic intent. You know, like, as Wes said, they went from fight to fight to fight. And as Andrew said, it's there have been too many, like, fake outs this whole series. Nobody thinks they're dead. And if they do think they're dead, they're not reading this series, you know, and I don't know. I mean, and I like Carol doing.
Clearly haven't read comic books for a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, and I think somebody said before this show started, but it needs to be reiterated, that they were specifically that dead is dead in the DC universe now that after Black Knight, they're even more careful about bringing people back to life. And, you know, even though Blackest Night ended with them bringing back a bunch of convenient characters and stuff, but, you know, it could just be that they're not dead, you know, they're just in a separate plane, so I don't know, whatever. It's just, it ends up, it's not very exciting, it's not very interesting, and I think, like I said, it's just because I'm being positive, it was cool to see a cool ending to the storyline, you know, an actual catharsis happening, but it also made me realize that the series is almost over, right? Like, this is,
And they shortened it. It's not 26 issues, it's 24. It's going to be 24, yeah.
Yes, we're well past the two-thirds of the point, and not enough of these stories have developed. I mean, I feel like I was reading 52, and when you read 52, nothing happened week to week to week, but you didn't really mind, because overall you got 52 out of it, but this is no 52.
I like 52.
And you know what else?
52 was very, very dry at the beginning.
I feel like, you know what, I like 52 a lot. That's what I was trying to say. And I think the title of the comic was Easy Come, Easy Go, and I think that's pretty condescending considering everything I've just said, you know, like how weightless so much of what happened is. I mean, I think the last couple of Hawk issues have been a pretty cool action sequence, but I don't know. There should have been a little bit more weight to everything.
Cop-out ending?
None of this is really justified completely eliminating Kendra Saunders from the continuity. I mean, it's still really annoying, you know. And she's wearing Kendra Saunders' outfit now. She just has longer hair and doesn't, you know. And it's disgusting because you really think about it. I mean, I'm not to be like bringing up rape every time we have a podcast, but think about the idea that Kendra Saunders she was so against the idea of being with Carter because she hated the idea of Destiny. Then her brain is erased and her body is used for this sex act with this guy, and it's kind of like, you know, she was morally opposed to the guy, and now it's just like, let's bone. It's depressing. It's like if someone just erased your brain and got you back with your ex-girlfriend.
It's just her alternate personality.
And Hawkman being such an inactive agent throughout most of this series has not revamped his character in any significant way. He's just been kind of standing around. And I happen to think Aqua War is a really stupid name for the conflict. And I unfortunately meant to be positive about this issue, and that's all
I can't
got.
Talk about Aqua War when it's
no, I just said the title.
Listen,
he said the title. It didn't. I'm,
the title is dumb.
The storyline. I gotta say, even the power sets between the Predator itself, it's sort of like, you know, taking me sort of not understanding why these things are cosmic entities. They're like, you're supposed to be around since, like, you know, millennia and, like, you know, billions upon billions of years, you know.
Right,
and yet they're not, they don't seem at all capable of sustaining themselves. They should have died ages ago.
How do they even power the ranks? I don't understand where that connection is. No one's bothered to explain that connection yet. No, I mean, maybe they will.
Don't.
There's, but, and again, to say for character beats again, the fact of the bones coming to take, you know, Shara's mom, at the end of it, it sort of so gets to me. Just the fact that she said, "Shaera, help me." I'm like, no, she's been spitting venom for the past 5 issues since she was created for these books, cursing everything out. She should have been cursing her name as a villainess that she was created to be. And as Wes has said, interesting character that she created. You know, created and was the most interesting thing about the Hawk storyline. She should have been, "I'll get you, Shaera," and it dies.
While I think that she definitely shouldn't have been screaming, "Save me," but I don't think she would have been in the right to be like, "Fuck you, Shaera," because, you know, her goal wasn't to fuck over Shaera, it was to become powerful.
Wait, so your goal wasn't about fucking over Shaera. So killing her and dumping her bones of her body
for thousands of years.
She didn't do that.
That wasn't personal.
That was the other
that
dude.
Wasn't personal.
No, she was involved in the spell. That was the whole idea, that she was actually behind the whole thing.
And it's anyway of killing her daughter, so it wasn't personal.
No, she was behind it the whole time. That was like the whole idea. She was behind the whole thing.
It wasn't personal to Shaera. It wasn't like, "Fuck you, Shaera, because I hate you." It was, "Fuck you, Shaera, you're in my way."
Oh, that's so much better.
I think it's just typically for a bad guy to do. It's just supposed to be like a last kick that the good guy in their face, or last redemptive thing for the good guy or whatever, and make the bad guy seem that much more pathetic or whatever.
Well, I mean, what those last words did, though, was for a second, it made me think, oh, is she actually going to go and rescue this bitch? And thank God she didn't, because then I really would have just ripped the pages out.
She just ran a sword through her. I really doubt she's going to try to go rescue her.
I still don't have a good feeling about the Hawkman and Hawkgirl. I don't like the fact that they were slaughtering everyone who came in like the nearest vicinity of them. It was ridiculous.
They're people, supposedly. So.
They do kill a lot of people.
Everyone. The only person who survived were Zamorons, and half of them bitches got frozen.
Well, they got released right after, Shara again ran a sword through her mother. Aside from that, in the story itself, we had small little portions of, again, Dead Man, and what else?
He's standing there in their house, clothes on the floor, dust.
Death Storm.
I got a question. What happens to Grandpa on the motorcycle?
I wanted to bring that up.
It's like he's back in the home.
Ride back to the old folks home.
They leave it's that like old man out in the cold.
Family. He's going to that crappy apartment of hers.
Wouldn't he feel great if he came back for his grandpa? His grandpa died of like pneumonia.
The grandpa is a supporting character. I mean, that's what happens when you create a secondary character, right? They become integral for the story. They become new pieces that we're not supposed to care about, and then eventually are supposed to make us think about new things about life or moral choices, or
and then kill them to make a shock value.
Oh, is that what happens?
I want the dust to come together and form a little hawk baby, and that to be the protagonist for storylines, like a combination of them. Like
that would be cool.
They didn't get to.
Nice.
They didn't get to have a child. They just,
Andrew agrees with Eric, and I agree with Eric that there should have been a baby.
Hawk baby!
We move on.
I think there should be a sandy dust baby.
So, we're going to move on from the topic of discussion. We're going to move over to Green Lantern Corps number 56, which is still not the end of the storyline with the weapon.
Oh, God, endless storyline!
It's a five-issue storyline!
Still not the end of the storyline. We still have at least another issue to go. Before we actually get a conclusion, and again, the character of the weapon was still continue to go forth even after the storyline even concludes. But we do get Sinestro coming in to do not much of anything. We do have some sort of legal mumble jumble going around with the Green Lanterns able to not break the truce.
Gotta love loopholes.
Yeah, someone give me an explanation as to why this issue even exists.
Let's try it. Let's try something.
To allow Kyle to get punked again, I guess. I don't know.
Yep.
A few issues ago.
Look out, Kyle. Oh.
Wait, I want to hear Brent's opening tale.
Everyone thought it was a decidedly bad idea for Kyle and Sinestro to have that scene. And this issue comes along, and I think Eric used the word, Kyle used the word tricked, and saying that Sinestro tricked him into a fist fight, which, goes completely against my reasoning for that fist fight happening in the first place. So I just wanted to say that while I was right about Sinestro popping back into the storyline, which you all thought was not going to happen.
No, we saw at that point we saw the cover solicits. We knew he was coming back. We just don't think that Kyle's going to get any kind of comeuppance, or they're going to talk about his mother. We think it's going to be still Kyle-less.
Well, yeah, I don't see how his. Well, let me not say this and piss you all off.
because it is dumb what you were about to
say. Well, this is going to piss you all off because I don't know any. I suck at the English language, so. I don't see how his mother is really relevant right now. Right now. I see how
it's constantly
upset about his mother.
What are you talking about?
I just don't think it's, like we discussed before, it would actually be a really strong point of drama. I mean, I'm not going to get into this whole argument again. It would be a really, really, really good thing to bring up. Yes.
Let's
move on. Let's not bring it up again. We're going to just
continue. The potential of his mom being here does not make what's going on any worse.
But I think it would. I think we're talking about
it's the kind of thing that needs to be there, and it's weird that it's not. whether or not it benefits anything is secondary.
At least mention something. But not,
Once again, we've covered this point many times already.
We made a Batman metaphor. We're done.
Let us discuss what happens in this issue particularly.
Turn to the camera.
And they are.
I'll talk about the issue really quick because I kind of made my peace with Green Lantern Corps. I've made the decision that Kyle's going to be, especially after Tony Bedard interview where he specifically said Kyle can't fight at all. Really,
yeah. That's not what he said.
That's not what he said.
He's a lover, not a fighter.
He said he's a lover and John is a fighter.
Now come on, now Kyle is a better fighter than John. I mean, John got crippled by Drake and Kyle beat.
The last time they fought, John was in a Marine.
Let's bring up Graven, yeah.
Now Graven was somebody who crippled John and he ended John's career and defeated all the Dark Stars, and friggin' Kyle beat him in a 1-on-1. So, I mean, you know, it's not like, hands down, and they've had a couple of fights. It's just, and Kyle, especially towards the Judd Whitaker's point, at that point in his career on, Kyle was a fighting force. Like, Kyle was good at fighting. That was, like, his whole thing. You know, he beat Fatality, no problem. Like, he was just a good fighter at that point. So the fact that, say, Kyle's not a fighter, it's kind of... Even looking at Tomasi's run, Kyle was the one who kept turning things around. When Kyle fought Guy Gardner one-on-one, and he did fine, you know, like, versus it took the whole league to... It's one of those things where it doesn't seem like something they've played up a lot over the years, but it's kind of implicit in Kyle's character that he does perfectly fine when there's a fight to happen. You know what I mean?
He's not saying Kyle's a bitch. He's just saying he would rather make love.
He'd rather make love than get in a fight.
It's like someone summarizing the worth of a character based on, I don't know, just reading their wiki or something. I don't know.
Just reading his own storylines. I mean, Kyle is a sensitive guy. That's fine if you want to turn that around on Kyle. But Kyle's never really even been that sensitive. Kyle's always been
In a relationship. That's what he's trying to say, that the guy's been in relationship after relationship after relationship after relationship. There's nothing wrong with being a lover. Damn.
No, it's not. We're not talking about that. Kyle's a sensitive guy. I don't like him characterizing Kyle as being like, Kyle's the kind of guy who talk about me diplomatic. That's not even accurate for his history. I mean, Kyle's been frequently getting.
Hold on a second. Because I know one thing that Brandon's trying to say is that Bedard is trying to characterize him as one. Kyle understands the meaning of love. While John understands the meaning that, you know, he was a Marine, a fighter. He understands the concept of fighting for. You know, what he believes in. Well, Kyle believes to understand that he could find a different way around what he believes in instead of just having to fight. So in a tactical position, which two would come out on top is, again, up to grabs and all depending on the writer. So if Bedard believes that John is a better capable strategist or fighter against Kyle Rayner, that's what's going
to
happen.
I think he made a point to say that Kyle's not a fighter. And he made a point to say that, and Kyle's gotten beat up a lot in these storylines. And I think that's the kind of tone we're supposed to get from this, that Kyle tried his best against Sinestro, but there's no way he was going to win. And Kyle tried his best against the Weaponer, but there was no way he was going to win. And Kyle got jumped by that guy in this issue, but there was no way he was going to win, you know?
Hey, he got jumped by behind, that was it. I don't actually see a fight that led him to that. He just got hit from behind when he wasn't listening.
I don't want to get into a whole Kyle gotten beat up. Like I said, if we talk about it, I'll get upset about it. I made my peace with the fact that as long as Bedard is writing the title, Kyle will get beat up. I mean, in the first story, I'm like, get backhanded by Hanu. You know, I made my peace with it. That's fine. But
I don't think it was a backhand.
That's literally backhanded. I mean,
he got backhanded.
But it's fine. Like, I'm just over it. That's just the way it is. I want to be positive. So there's the part in the beginning where Sinestro rallies everybody is cool. The Green Lantern's conflict is cool, though I don't understand what the conflict really is. I mean, right in front of them, the Sinestro Corps start murdering dudes. They're like, we can't fight back. I mean, this points to the whole...
They killed anybody, because everybody was in the castle already.
There is a dude, I'm looking at a page right here, whose bones are showing because he was blasted by a Sinestro Corps member.
Yeah, well, he was running, probably.
He deserves to be killed, right?
Exactly. He is dying. Everyone is running.
Running towards the castle. So they got one in. They got a cheap shot in.
Green Lantern killed a couple dudes.
It's not like they didn't try to protect everybody. John ordered the people in there. Kyle and Sora, Nick lifted their shield. So they did their duty.
The one thing that's just disturbing about the entire concept is that these are Green Lanterns against Sinestro members. It's already been stated twice in the Green Lantern Corps rule book that they're allowed to either, one, arrest these people, or two, kill them. For whatever long-standing truths that Sinestro has made with Hal Jordan shouldn't really apply to the rest of the Green Lantern Corps. He has no pull with the rest of them.
Well, Gambit's the one who's telling them this. Gambit, not to fight.
Yeah, Ganthet still shouldn't have any pull either. He took himself away from being a Guardian.
But they have more respect for Ganthet than they do any of the other Guardians.
Now, in all fairness, the conflict we're talking about is brought up in the issue. John Stewart does say to Ganthet, like, we cannot turn our back on these people. We don't deserve the rings if we do. You know, it's evil to not help them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's fine. I mean, that's true. Except the fact is they're doing it as they're talking. You know what I mean? And there isn't any reason for John Stewart to just be like, fuck this, and start blasting dudes. I mean, there isn't. You know, there is
what
no reason.
What I'm getting out of this issue is that it's not the truce between Hal and the New Guardians. It's the truce that the Green Lantern Corps made with the other corps during Blackest Night that's keeping them from going full force on their ass.
Brandon, I can agree with you there, but there was no actual showing of that.
I mean, how would Ganthet know what Hal Jordan's been doing either? That's what I'm thinking. Like, that's a plot hole.
The truce is a huge plot hole. It's never been explained, the truce at all. Yeah, that's 100% true.
Yeah, well, no, it's like, hey, we had to maintain the truce, and, oh, you know, we can do whatever we want as long as we don't use constructs, I guess. But then they're sitting here shooting laser beams directly at Green Lantern shields.
You know, and so they're already breaking the truce here. I mean, they're fighting them. I mean, so it's right. A little silly why do they have to?
They stopped.
You
know. They stopped, and then they said we're going to throw down now.
No, they were shooting. They were shooting at them for like 3 pages.
Yeah, Carousel tries to eat one of them, and then she gets shot. Her constructs get destroyed by John Stewart, right?
Kill the Guardians, that the Greens interfere and won't be us who broke the truce. They're shooting at them, and it's like, it's ridiculous. We have to return fire. And it's like, no, don't worry. We're not breaking the truce yet. We're not breaking the truce. We're just shooting at the Guardians.
I think that's inflict a fatal wound with the ring to actually count.
Fatal wound on the Green Lantern?
Because
they've clearly killed two or three Guardians, at least.
Fatally on the Green Lanterns.
Yeah, so here we go. I think we kind of all get the consensus that the truce is unclear. They shouldn't have been what happened shouldn't have happened. There should have been a little bit more of a conflict about it. You know, whatever. I think, and then the way the issue plays out then Sinestro finally gets to fight the Weaponry and completely destroys him. Like, completely, completely destroys him. And that's fine. You want to build the character up. I happen to think that Sinestro is good as Green Lantern he is. It's a little unfair to say he's better than every character in the title.
Since when was he a good fighter? I mean, I feel like he's always kind of getting...
Well, he was trained by the Grandmaster of the Karagar, so it's okay. But
one of the things I have about
calm down for a second.
Go ahead, Colton. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things is I don't have a problem with him necessarily beating the Weaponer, but he kind of seemed to go through the White Lantern energy kind of a little bit easily.
Well, no, there's that.
I mean, he's standing there as a bear trap of White Lantern energy crashes around him. It shatters at his aura.
Not only that, but like it's like Sinestro can single-handedly, you know, take the Weaponer one-on-one, and then there's like six Green Lanterns here, including Ganthet, a Guardian, who can't do anything.
That needs to be a point made, because Ganthet got completely taken out, and that's ridiculous. I mean, why Ganthet's power levels need to be really addressed very clearly, because, I mean, technically putting a Green Lantern ring on a Guardian is like putting, you know, it's giving a nuclear bomb a bullet, right? I mean,
or giving a fighter pilot a Green Lantern ring.
What? No. What?
No.
I'm going with Eric's metaphor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's illogical, and there's no reason that they can't just disintegrate the Weaponer right off the bat, you know, and the fact that the White Lantern energy is supposed to be designed to take apart construct and stuff, and you never even see him try to do this. I mean, the whole reason he was able to beat Kyle and everybody else is because he could take apart their constructs, and Sinestro would just start shooting shit at him, but whatever. I mean, I think it's, considering this issue's five, this storyline's been five issues of just, like, waiting for this, it happened really abruptly, you know, and I think just to happen, and I think them turning around being like, we gotta save this guy, now it's like, you know what, that's great, now we're not even gonna get the Green Lantern Corps getting a rematch with this guy just kicked their ass, got his ass kicked, now we just watch the Green Lanterns desperately save his ass, you know, and that's, it's frustrating, you know, I mean,
they just randomly go, I kinda like him now, yeah!
I wonder if he'll actually become an ally in later parts if they end up saving his life.
Like, have y'all never heard the enemy of my enemy is my friend?
No, Sinestro is now Hal's best friend, apparently, so if they help the Weaponer, that means that they're going against Hal, which starts a war of the Green Lanterns, you'd think.
Basically, the only reason they go along and join and say we should save this guy or we can't let this happen is because they're expected to do that because they're characters in a comic book. I mean, that's really the only justification we get. There's not enough weight in this happening at all. I mean, I'm very disappointed in this storyline in general. Revolt of the Alpha Lanterns, I mean, I was problematic. That structure of that story is problematic, but at least it had a lot going on. This does not have a lot going on. I mean, there's very little happening in this storyline, you know, and it's very much a fap-off for Sinestro, and that's cool. I mean, like Jeff said, he's Dr. Dr. Doom is a ridiculously tall character, but Sinestro was not this strong. I mean,
I actually want to make mention of that. Yeah.
If this is to be believed, because Sinestro got into a fight with, in Rebirth, he got into a fight with Kyle Rayner, who was half dead, and Hal Jordan, who just woke up from death, and he lost. You know, so we're supposed to believe that Kyle Rayner and Hal Jordan together could beat the Weaponer, and yet that means Kyle Rayner and Hal Jordan together could beat Gantt and Hanu and John Stewart and everybody. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Don't underestimate the buddy cop.
Well, and here's the deal. I made a few notes, and I noticed a few things that I didn't like, and I guess I didn't take any notes about things that I didn't like, because those are things you have to actually look for. But I didn't. The coloring on the Green Lantern constructs was just. I didn't like the black and green thing. That was just. I don't know. I never liked that.
Well, apparently that's a new decree at DC now. They have to color everything like the movie now. That's been a weird, across the board decree. But they can't use like pastel greens. It has to be very dark.
Whatever.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so. Anyways, another thing that I think I just realized is, I don't think I realized this before, that the Weaponer actually doesn't do anything. He just sits there, puts a shield in front of him, and then the shield makes things for him.
Yes.
Literally.
He's the Weaponer, not the fighter.
But he doesn't even make the weapons. He just sits the shield in front of him and is like, oh, look, the shield has created the gun for me.
The shield is the weapon he made.
He didn't make it. He just threw a net on a shield.
He threw a net on a shield. That's all I've seen.
That is aesthetic design, you asshole. Appreciate that.
And the writing, I thought. A lot of the writing was... a lot of the dialogue was just awkward. Like, what is he trying to steal? Your ring? A pet? A woman? And then, like somebody tell me why we're doing what he says. This is why. And then according just goes, ah. Like, that makes sense. Like, what?
You don't question Sinestro.
No, he's not questioning. He's John Stewart. It's like, why are we doing what John Stewart is saying? And John's just like, well, this is why there's weapons here. And the Coordinator's like, oh, no further discussion.
It's supposed to be cheesy. It's not supposed to be. I mean, it's a superhero comic book. It's, well, let me not say superhero. It's an action comic book. So you're gonna get those throwaway lines that are just most like guilty pleasure. It's just supposed to make you smile and move on. It's not everything doesn't have to be
well written,
super sarcastic or super.
No, and that point, I want to hear what crap it thinks about the rest of the issue.
Well, no,
my favorite part, my favorite page is where they have the shield constructs, and you get the three different shields. I don't know why, but every time I'm flipping through as you guys are talking about different things, I keep coming back to that, and I really just kind of dig that image. Yeah, the Weaponer doesn't really do a whole hell of a lot. I really like Hanu, because he hits things, and that's kind of how I like my heroes. I like them to just kind of hit things. And he kind of went down like a chump before, although he did jump up surprisingly well for someone who had, like, his hands and feet, like, pinioned to the ground. I am a little surprised at, I mean... Maybe because Sinestro was coming from a Halloween parade, now the extra fear of the costumes gave him extra power, and that suddenly he is just, you know, the man. But I never really expected Sinestro to be quite so kind of badass. And
maybe inherently that the Weaponer is afraid of him, that even if he can't admit it.
Maybe
that's weakening his or strengthening Sinestro.
But that if that were the case, then, I mean, I suppose this would be one of those times where, you know, people would yell, no, he's supposed to be showing it and not telling it. But, you know, that would have been something a nice little mention of.
He shouldn't be this powerful. I mean, I think they've been, in all fairness, this is something that they could have been playing up more, you know, and they've kind of always been saying he's the greatest Green Lantern, and this is really the first evidence we've ever seen of it. So I should be grateful, I guess, but I'm certainly not. So.
Well, they kept saying he was the greatest Green Lantern, so I was like, okay, let's show it.
Well, for the record, this is typical comic books. I don't know if you guys have been reading for more than a fucking issue, but this is how villains, not the best of villains, obviously, but this is generally how villains are created. They do something bad, they bitch around other characters, and That's how characters were.
Right. I don't think bad comic books should be defended by saying this is what comic books are like. I think people like that. Stop reading comic books. I think if that's what they think. You know.
I think there's definitely a difference between bad writing and general comic tropes. And this is general. This is basic stuff. This is. I'm gonna take this bad guy. He's gonna do some bad things. He's gonna be badass, and then you'll like him. You'll either like him or you'll hate him. But either way, you'll want to see him, and that's what Tony Bedard is doing with Sinestro. He's making him do bad things. He's killing people. He's doing it in a badass way. The weapon can't stop him.
He's bad, and you know it. Really, really bad.
Hey, I happen to
think he's doing it in such a boring way.
I happen to think. If I like Sinestro, which, you know, I used to like Sinestro, and I still have a soft spot for Sinestro in general, you know, and when I found out that Sinestro was, like, the second player in the Green Lantern game, I got kind of excited, you know, so I do like Sinestro as a bad guy, but I like the heroes, you know, and I happen to think that there should be a little bit more attention paid to them, because I think the last couple storylines have all been disjointed in terms of what people are doing. And as someone who reads comics and their power fantasies involving fights and stuff, and I think it's pretty clear from this podcast that I get pretty mad about who wins and who loses fights, you know, I happen to think that a little bit more consistency should be paid, you know. And okay, as much as yes, you have to build up the weaponer by making him a badass and making him toss people around, and yes, you know, I can't expect in an ensemble book, especially the heroes, to always win every fight. If I'm a fan of Hanu, if I'm a fan of Jon Stewart, if I'm a fan of Gantada, if I'm a fan of Kyle, if I'm a fan of Sornik, I've gotten a lot to be embarrassed about in this storyline, you know what I mean? Unless I'm a fan of this brand new Harry
Chester. I'm a fan of Sinestro, so, you know.
Yeah. The only character, if you're a fan of just Sinestro versus everybody else, you know, then you got a lot to talk shit about. But, you know, I mean, and, you know.
Sometimes heroes have bad days.
Maybe Sinestro was going to get his ass kicked at the end of the storyline. Maybe we'll get a bit where Kyle's going to go to punch him and Sornik's like, no, I'll take care of it. And yeah, Kyle's girlfriend will knock out the bad guy for him. I mean, you know, that's the best we could hope for at this point, but I'm not even going to put my money on that, you know.
No, it's going to be Jon Stewart, and I'll tell you why it's going to be Jon Stewart. On the last page, that cod piece. That's
why. he's just going to leap out of crotch first and knock Sinestro out?
Look at that thing.
It is Sinestro defeated by a codpiece.
I would normally go right with you and say Jon Stewart's the one who's going to make a big impact here. Except at the end of a lot of the time,
a deep impact.
He's going to really penetrate the source of the problem and get right in there.
He's going to give it the steel, John.
I think because Jon Stewart really needs to fill a void in his character. You know, but in all fairness, I happen to think that every storyline. Every comic so far that Tony Bedard is writing in Green Lantern has ended with a splash page of a character showing up only to get completely destroyed the next issue. So
I want to talk about the artist a little bit.
Before that, can I bring one thing? Remember, Eric, when you were saying that, you know, Kyle gets jumped from behind by a random Sinestro Corps member?
Yes.
Yeah.
That Sinestro Corps member's name is Braganza.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Oh, poor Eddie fucking us over.
Braganza. Burr-Gunza.
It's cute, but I mean, come on, I think it's a little lame that Kyle got jumped from. I mean, I'm not going to complain about it because enough is enough, but
so anyways,
it's a little lame.
I want to talk about the art for a second. I have two problems on the first page. First problem is, I don't know, the Sinestro Corps power battery, I don't think it's supposed to look like that. Barely at all.
What, you mean like the bad guys from War of the Worlds?
Actually, it actually looks like it's making the bat symbol. It's got Batman's head on it.
Well, he is the symbol of fear in Gotham.
It looks like it's got Batman's head's outline, the outline of Batman's head. And the second thing is there's these two characters talking. And if I was just looking at this picture, if it wasn't for the coloring, I would honestly think it's two different characters. Like it's four characters on this page. Because like this, or maybe three. Cause like
Arkelo
this,
Grundy?
This purple guy like looks completely different from the middle to the bottom panel. I don't know.
Looks like the freaking Hulk.
Yeah. It's
supposed to be the Hulk and like Slash?
Whatever. And it looks like either Kirkham or his inker, or inkers, I don't know. Yeah, his inkers.
Bat.
Bat and Rob Hunter, whatever. Really like to have the whole shadow on someone's eyes, or just shadow on their entire body because they can't draw eyes or whatever. Because like Sinestro for like 90% of his appearances in this book has a shadow over his eyes. Jon Stewart always has a shadow
traumatic.
Over his, but it's
and he's
like,
black.
It's a little bit too much. Like Sinestro has a shadow over his eyes when he appears.
And then on the next page, another shadow over his eyes, and then a silhouette battle, and then, like, it's ridiculous.
Did he always have dark black eyes?
Who's Sinestro?
Yeah.
No, not always.
He is evil.
No, no, no. No, he's that's an Ethan Van Sciver invention, if I'm
I think so.
You know, it's funny to bring up the fact that Kuhan did bring up the Sinestro Corps power battery and the fact that it's on planet Kurgar.
Oh, is it?
They've yet to really deal with the fact that that's fucked up, and the Green Lantern should do something about that.
I did not even notice that.
Wow.
We've known that from
that's just like we decided to make Korrigar our new home base.
Matt, it was gonna be awkward to go home seeing that thing in the background.
I don't think we're gonna have to worry with any kind of story logic anytime soon.
Well, hold on.
Oh, come on.
It's from the planet Kyle was just on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on Korrigar, yeah.
Kyle was just on Earth.
No, when the story started.
Oh yeah, that's right.
When it first started. So did he not see the giant?
He just didn't notice it.
It was on the other side of that falling building. I couldn't get a good look at it. I just thought it was the sun.
The battery? No, they know the battery's there.
It's like when he lived in New York, he never noticed the Statue of Liberty. No, it's like, oh.
Huh. The hell what is that thing? Who is this chick?
It's like, I have a really big problem with foreshortening. Is she in my living room, or is she just across the street? I want to talk about Patrick Gleason. I believe that's Patrick Gleason, right? His alternate cover?
Yeah.
The alternate cover.
How messed up looking is that the fingerhead guy?
Yeah, just to say, the alternate cover is the second half of the other alternate cover for issue 55. Where the Green Lanterns are going up with Sinestro Corps members. So this one has the Sinestro Corps members all going against the Green Lanterns. So you see Arkillo, the finger, hand, three-eyed thing, the acid man guy, whatever, and Curacell, you know, the staple of the Sinestro Corps wars.
What's wrong with him?
Oh, Eric doesn't like the finger.
No, I love that guy. I think that guy.
Oh, you love that guy. Oh, sorry.
That guy's dope as hell.
Well, to get back on the interiors of the page, I didn't have a problem with Kirkham this issue. I thought for the most part this was the best looking issue he's done so far.
I agree.
And I thought the fight scenes were done well, and for what it's worth, if it continues looking like this right now, then I'm perfectly fine with it.
I agree. Most of my stuff is really nitpicky stuff. Like the way Romat Rue looks on the big Sinestro Corps splash. He looks really awkward. And the other thing that I don't like is that they had to end the last issue on this cliffhanger that all the Sinestro Corps showed up. But like they could have ended somewhere else so that this flowed more naturally. But they, I don't know. That's just a nitpick too.
No, I'm never gonna like this guy's art. It's not, proportions are wrong. I mean, everything, it's just awkward, static. He's, like I said a million times, he's from the Top Cow School. I'm never going to like his art. I mean, you know, he's never going to, I don't think, this is the best he could do is the stuff he does with Sinestro, you know, which is heavily shaded and overdone and stuff. I'm never going to like it, you know. So, I mean, I got, you know, it's never, this might be the best issue he's ever done. I can't tell the difference.
You literally never see John Stewart's eyes in this issue.
I'm kind of a fan of everything he does except for Sinestro. I think Sinestro is kind of
sketchy.
Well, that's what I like.
Too much line work, I guess.
Yeah. I think his, all of his art has that problem. Everything's a little dirty and sketchy. The figures, anyway. There's nothing going on in the backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. And I happen to think Sinestro is the only one it works with because it's okay for his hair. His hair moves a lot. And, you know, he's always looking at
He barely has any hair.
It looks like he's poorly imitating Scott Collins or something.
You know, he's doing Sylvester. He's doing all those really, really, Michael Turner.
Whatever.
Really
check this guy and did a week over, Collins.
There's a difference between Sylvester and Turner.
Skinny chicks versus fat chicks? I think that's the only difference.
I'm literally going through this issue and literally you never see John Stewart's eyes once.
I mean, Michael Turner came from Top Cow Studios.
He's going for the thing with John's eyes glow. Right.
Well, so did Francis.
No.
But if they glow, do they glow black? There are no eyes. In Tyler Kirkham's world, John Stewart is blind. He has no eyeballs.
Well, to comment on his artwork, I can literally say it is too sketchy, like pretty much like, you know, Eric's saying. He does good when he's presented with an option of drawing them big and, mostly like to fill the page. He'll take the page and he'll actually detail it, like, probably correctly, if you're just looking at the one guy. But as it goes down into the backgrounds, they start becoming like just stick figures half the time. There's like literally no big emotional changes. You can't really see their faces as clearly. Everything's like, just done stylized just to get it done quick and fast.
The symbols are
normally never present half the time. There's been at least three pages where John Stewart's symbol's not there.
I feel like it's more the, not to make a bunch of excuses for him, but I feel like the inkers really aren't doing him a favor. And there was two in this issue, but that's...
I'll tell you the truth, I think... The symbols popped up and disappeared drastically during the Artie and Seiya and the Revolt of the Alpha Lanterns art. Don't bother you now.
No, it bothered the crap out of me. Then I make a point to say, I think Artie and Seiya, really was unhappy that he was on the title and stuff too. I think there's certain scenes like John Stewart in the group shot when they get their rings back. There's no excuse for there to be no symbol there. I mean, you drew other details in the box, you know. And I think Kuan makes a really good point about, look at this splash page with Carousel or whatever the guy's name. What is the Roman
Roofs?
And look at, why is the top of his leg, his ass, I guess.
What is happening there?
That's the worst proportion I've ever seen in my entire life. The only thing worse than that is looking at Carousel next to him. Why is her body flat like that? I mean, you know, and then you keep going towards the end. I mean, there's this page where you see Sornik Natu from behind, and her ass is like 6 feet below the middle of her body. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, this is, it's the worst sense of human anatomy I've seen. The best picture he has in the entire issue is the picture where the spear javelin, I guess, whatever, gets fired at Sinestro, and he blocks it with his ring, and it looks like an anime picture, and that's it, really. So, you know, and sometimes
Kyle's back looks ridiculous too, and on that same panel with a Sornik Natu's, 6 feet below.
Look at the page where Carousel uses the hounds to scare off Sornik Natu and Kyle Rayner, right? Look at her ass, and look at Carousel's ass, and that's not just like, check out their asses. Look at the asses right above each other, and it's absurd. That's a ridiculous, it's like an old lady's ass on a skinny chick. It's insane. Like, no sense of proportions whatsoever. I mean, I actually like the way John Stewart's
arm looks. I like the way that Kyle is turning, but it's like his legs are, what?
He doesn't have hips. It's like
he doesn't. No, yeah, it's like you're turning the figure.
Now, what's funny is the line where Carousel gets blasted in that same page. I'm sorry, my hounds, my beautiful hounds. I don't understand this.
They're constructs, lady.
What is this? I don't either.
You've come to understand that they're constructs. You even fought against their reanimated corpses.
A couple days ago, yeah.
What's going on here?
You expect him to keep up with the untold tales of Blackest Night, do you? Like, are you shocked that he didn't read a $6 book?
At this point, we're just
for free.
Yeah, it's just nitpicking, as has been said before. Anyway, pretty much, we've gone long in the tooth on this one. We've said our piece. We're not entirely pleased on the issue. There's certain beats in there that, just gripe us. Artwork is not as, artwork is coming a long way since it first started. We're actually growing to accept it more. But as far as storylines goes, I think we're all in agreement. We're waiting for it to be over.
I'm a little bit less pessimistic than you guys are.
I just, I know what I want to happen is not going to happen in the next issue, and that really bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, Eric, for something new and hopefully going to be a mainstream thing that we're going to be doing in the Green Lantern Corecast, Eric, tell them what we're going to be doing new.
Well, as everybody hopefully who's listening knows, we have a biweekly show. We usually record on a Thursday, and then we publish it on a Sunday. But, I mean, hopefully that, anyway, we publish on a Sunday. It's biweekly. But we've discussed before the idea of doing theme shows. We always kind of hoped that we'd be able to alternate and have theme episodes with issued episodes. But the problem is that we got so many ongoing series, and we go on and on and on about the news happening that we don't really have room for themed episodes. So we want to do a themed episodes, but we do want our fans, you guys listening, to help us out. We've discussed it amongst ourselves, and we have three different options. We want you fans to tell us what you think is the best option for us to do our themed episode on. Now, we'll announce what, I guess, the winner in terms of tallying votes, however you want to tell. You can check us out on Twitter. You can go on the Green Lantern Forum. You can email us. You can call us, whatever you like. The three topics are Brandon suggested, covering certain storylines in Grant Morrison's JLA run featuring Kyle Rayner. I suggested that we all read, and this is what the idea was, that everybody who's in the cast that wants to participate, which will be at least three or four members of the cast, are going to read the issues, participate, and have a discussion just about these specific topics. I suggest that we cover the showcase issues, and that's all the issues about Hal Jordan before Green Lantern number one, and we talk about what that means to legacy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And Frankie suggested we go over a bunch of the Green Lantern and Elseworlds over the years, which there really aren't that many, and we have a podcast about them. So that's up to you, fans. Those three options. Would you like to hear the Green Lantern core cast talk about the JLA issues with featuring Kyle Rayner, written by Grant Morrison? Would you like to hear us talk about the Showcase issues, Hal Jordan's first appearance issues? Would you like to hear us have a whole podcast about the Elseworlds issues featuring various Green Lanterns over the years? But again, that'll be, I guess, 3 weeks from today. So let us know as soon as you can, and we'll let everybody know who wins next week. Also, while you guys are at it, we've had discussions amongst ourselves whether or not we should be covering Alan Scott news in the cast and reading JSA. We've all been kind of on the fence about it. I think for a while, Brandon was its biggest opponent, so we didn't want to make him cry, so we didn't do it. But now he's saying we should do it a lot, so who knows what we're going to do. But do you think we as a cast should start covering Alan Scott? Because his name is Green Lantern, even though he's not intrinsically tied to the legacy. And I guess also by extension, cover JLA. So that's two questions for you guys, our fans. What do you think we should do our theme show on? And what do you think we should do about JLA, JSA and Alan Scott?
All right. Well said, Eric. And that'll be us. That'll be it for the show. Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
Be sure to leave a voicemail at 206-339-0801.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time. And please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at KirbyCracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/RoyClarkMethod.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me and says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long.
I kind of dig it. Okay, yeah, my point is nowhere near as succinct as that one.
Yeah. Wait, I was like, wait,
I agree. He brings up a very good point. It is definitely, it's subtle, but I agree.
there are nuances to it.
Yes, yes.
There's a certain scent to it.
I'm glad we're all very serious.
So who said it?
I haven't seen him. Where are they?
You can find him on your own site.
You can find him on your own site.
Oh, burn.
Hang on.
That is too hilarious.
In your face.
Skype chat. Yeah, they're in the Skype chat.
Is it in, like, the big movie?
Go grid? From the bottom up.
Just do control F and then concept.
Well, I just posted it right here, like the last
time. Come on, you can just do some editing.
Where everyone can do what we should have done in the first place and repost it. Yeah, that's right.
Which is exactly
we're all assholes.
We're all looking at it like, yeah, just get to where we're looking.
Okay.
Yeah, I
see him.
Catch up, man. Catch up.
Okay, now back to the show.
Sorry, Frankie.
You don't get to move on, Kuhan.
Colton, please.
Frankie, please.
Clearly, Colton was the problem in that conversation. I think Colton needs to stop talking the rest of the podcast as a punishment for causing that conversation.
I didn't cause that. It was Kuhan who caused it.
Okay. No need to, you know, jabber on about it. Okay.
Okay.
Would that
make it a hermaphrodite?
No, it would probably be a dude because DC Comics is sexist.
Hawk it.
Hawk it.
That's a good mantra for the series, I think.
Yeah.
That would
I get true. It. I get it. It's also really insulting to call Hermaphrodite an it. I don't know if you understand that.
Yeah.
But, create a new pronoun, then.
I was saying it's actually...
Well, you don't need to create a new pronoun.
I think my internet exploded for a second there. It disconnected for some reason.
No, everyone did it to everybody.
Well, no, no, but
I was hosting the call.
Hosting the call.
Oh.
Yeah, my internet totally disconnected for a little bit.
That was all right. You then, you bastard.
What was the last thing that was I said?
Woo! Go Team Venture!
Go Team Venture!
See, I just made that exact same joke, literally, word for word. I don't understand why you have to say the exact same thing I just said.
Because we're supposed to say it at the same time.
But then why do you wait 3 seconds after I say it?
Because I didn't know you were going to say it until you said it.
Exactly, so I'm going to say it again.
All right, stop, or we're going to turn this all around.
Listen to your mother, kids.
Okay, 3, 2, 1. Go Team Venture!
Oh, that was worse. So
horrible.
That was worse.
I liked it worse after listening to
that. That was awesome. We should add that at the beginning of the show.
You kept delaying it like you were waiting for me to say something.
No, I said go, and then you're like, go Team Venture.
No, you do it fast. You go Team Venture.
No, I know, but you did it slow.
You did it slow, you retard.
No, I did it normal.
You freaking whore. You guys are like,
seriously, kids punching each other in the back of the car.
He's always drunk on martinis.
So, hold on. So it's Colton. In this fantasy, Andrew is our father.
Apparently. Which explains why I'm traumatized.
It's fantastic. Eric, do you finish playing the game?
Did I finish? Yeah, I beat the whole game, and I'm never going to play again.
No, I mean, are you done? Are you going to...
That's impressive.
Yeah, considering.
No, are you done for the night?
No, you can go.
We can go.
No. We're not asking him to start
the show. He
gives
us leave. It's okay.
We're saying are you done playing for the night?
I'm at a social gathering right now. So
you're at a social...
I can't just quit.
In the game. Okay.
Yes, in the game. I'm standing. I'm about to start dancing.
You're the dancing queen.
No,
best
I'm dancing.
Game ever.
No, I'm dancing.